This is Phil Pritchett. Welcome to the P2 Podcast.
There's never been a better time than right now to be a musician.
Jimmy hit Austin.
My name's Phil, and I just want to play rock and roll, man.
Tougher than the rest. Stranded at the riverside, we prayed to heaven and we ran like hell. But I had nothing left inside. No, I had nothing left inside.
Fans, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. It is Phil Pritchett here, coming to you from Trinidad World Recording Studios, my studio here in Fort Worth, Texas, on the P2 Podcast. Listening worldwide on philpritchett.com and radiofreetexas.org. You are the fans. You are in the know. Consider yourself a little more intelligent for having tuned in for this segment here as we guide you through the fog of your chaotic musical life, looking for that lighthouse on the shore. Guiding in. You know who coined the whole lighthouse on the shore image that's in your mind right now as you huddle close to your laptop or put your iPod earbuds in to check out what's going on, to check out the news from the front on the P2 Podcast? The lighthouse in the fog was first referenced by our good friend, our guest, a staple on the podcast, Kurt South. How you doing, South?
I'm doing well.
He rolled in here, one of the early podcasts, talked about how he played with a lot of future Elton Johns, having played with many young, pimple-faced, pockmarked, sexually confused guys, and said, hey, I didn't know I was playing with a bunch of future Elton Johns. We ought to do a podcast greatest hits album of something you download, just like...
Just me pissing people off?
Yeah, right. that'd be like one whole thematic album.
That'd be a double album.
Hot Kurt South opinions that ruffle the feathers of... A nation hanging out his every
sexually
word.
Confused young men. Sorry, guys.
But Kurt is here. Man, I wanted to get into this because, oh, geez. Yeah, this show is about, if nothing else, talking about the things we come up against every day. I'm sure we cover the same ground frequently. You know, we come back. Is the album dead? Blah, blah, blah. Isn't Dylan great? Oh, whatever, you know. What's up with you two? Cover a lot of the same ground. But always in a little different.
You two sucks.
A little different. Coming at it from a different angle a little bit. But I tell you what, I need help. So I know you've laid down on the couch here many times. I've played the role of shrink. I've gotten out the pad and paper, put on my horn rim spectacles.
And your just corduroy blazer with leather patches.
Yeah, with the patches on the elbows, and helped you through some things. Remember that time I helped you out during the whole Traveling Wilburys deal? You were kind of freaked out by the Traveling Wilburys.
Yeah.
You love them as individual artists, but not as a band.
Still sniff glue. You didn't help me out of that.
No. Didn't help, did it? I won't bill you for that then.
Okay.
So I want to ask permission to lay down here on the couch.
Yeah. Get comfortable.
I'm going to get comfortable here and just because I need some analysis. And anybody out there has an opinion on this, please email me, phil@philpritchett.com. I read all my emails.
Put your shirt back on because your back will stick to this to this pleather here.
Yeah, I know. I know it.
Pete, too, likes to podcast shirtless.
Oh, come on. Creeping everyone out. Kurt South, once again. Sorry. It's what he does.
I'm on a roll today.
He's on a roll. He's on a roll. Too much coffee for him.
I'm drinking right now.
What are you drinking over there? He's drinking heavily. Is there scotch in there? What is that?
Wouldn't you like to know?
He's been scurrying off to the kitchen like every 10 minutes and just coming back with a big old cup. Just kind of going, all right, let's go. Let's go. No, my problem comes from this. It's no doubt I am flawed. I'm a homer. I'm a guy who sticks to his Texas roots. You know, I'm kind of an old school guy. You know, I'm not 21 years old, for God's sake. I'm in my late 30s now. You know, I've got children, a wife. Yes, of course. 30s. Of course. I'm out there playing gigs.
Sun is setting on PT.
Is it? I feel like we're doing good. I'm in my prime, South. But my problem is this. I feel immense pressure when I look. Yeah, I'm trying to book gigs and stuff. I'm running everything. I feel immense pressure when I see that there are musicians out there who constantly update their Facebooks, their Twitter accounts. They're constantly beaming out asides, little asinine thoughts or something. Now, and I feel this pressure like, man, I'm not doing that. Is that something I just have to do? Now, I'm not saying it. Of course, people got to know who you are. Hey, you got to get your MySpace page and have your music out there. Well, duh. Okay, that's what we're doing. We're making music, right? I mean, our dates are on there. We email everybody. We send out the odd tweet. Hey, man, we're going to be playing this show to inform people. Now, I don't know if I was John Mayer. You have 2 million, 4 million people following you on Twitter. You might feel very, but that you already have an audience there, so it makes sense to like, hey, I got this audience.
John
here.
Mayer's not building his audience; he's just engaging.
Man, well, that's
in kind of
my point here. I wonder if so many bands out there who are just getting started are just making it their mission. Man, we're starting a band. How do you grow the band? Man, we get as many people on Facebook and Twitter and stuff as you possibly can. I'm just like, dude, they don't have any fans, man. They're just annoying me. They all email me and request a friend thing from me on Facebook. Yeah, I'm just kind of like, who the hell are these guys? I don't know. I okay everybody, you know. But that was kind of the fall of MySpace, man. Is you just got so many. I got so many friend requests from just heavy metal bands in New Zealand and Oxford, Mississippi. I'm just like,
yeah,
come check out our new record, man. And it eventually evolves to that. And some bands like that have just unbelievable numbers. So I guess what I need for you is, as my shrink here, my acting shrink, is just to say, Phil, I don't know, is it okay that I don't do it that much? I don't tweet, Kurt.
Are you
tearing
up?
Is it okay? Hand me that box of Kleenex over there. Gosh. Hand it. It's right there.
I didn't realize this was that bad here.
Oh, jeez.
No, I don't tweet myself. I tweet extremely infrequently.
Do you have?
But I do.
Do you even have a Twitter account?
Yeah.
Do you
really? I get emails every day. So-and-so's following me on Twitter.
Man, it's a great idea, and it's a useful tool. There's no question.
You know what would help?
You could send something out, a little thought, a little. But, man, there's all these quote-unquote success stories now you're reading about online of some band that tweeted, and you know they had all these Twitter fans, and it seems to be very short-lived. If that's the story, they got a lot of people signed up.
Yeah.
It rarely translates into and we have seen, we've been around with the internet explosion since the big MySpace and Facebook. There has been a few years here, and you remember like the Arctic Monkeys or, you know, some of these bands that kind of burst onto the scene with a million, you know, people following them on this and that. And just, I don't know if that translates into sales or real fans. I don't know.
What they don't tell you about those Twitter success stories or those, anything like that is that band has been out touring and putting out records, or put out a record that people already liked.
Yeah.
And then people act like Ashton Kutcher, who's one of the most visible celebrities in the world.
Right.
Having 3 million people following him on Twitter is a big deal. I'm like, God, he's got 3 million people looking at him every day.
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, at 2 o'clock in the morning, these stupid punked episodes keep coming. That's not an accomplishment to me.
Well, and it doesn't. He's not growing. His influence isn't growing, is it? Or he's not.
No.
What is he building? What does that get you?
Well, he's already there. It's
right. Exactly.
Just, yeah.
If Johnny Depp also started tweeting a lot, I'm sure he'd have 3 million also,
yeah,
or more. I'm just like, you know. I mean,
I think it's funny. Some people are like Blake Shelton's really funny on Twitter, and the only reason I know that is because I've had people tell me, and I've gone and read him, and he's real funny.
Yeah.
That's great. But Blake Shelton's already a star.
Yeah,
so,
if you already have a huge audience, Twitter is a good way to reach him, right?
Well, and what I wish that, because Facebook essentially is Twitter, but with more stuff.
Yeah, right.
And when I first got on Facebook, I was late to the Facebook game. But when I first got on Facebook, I was putting stuff on there several times a day, blah, blah, blah. Now I only use it for, it's strictly business now.
Yeah, yeah.
When I use it to promote shows, tell people what's going on, if I need to get the word out to...
And isn't that all your fans really want from you?
We're
not celebrities, man, on that scale.
Yeah.
They're just kind of like, man,
I think for you and I, that's...
I think it turned people off. They were just, man, I'm getting a freaking tweet from Phil about every, you know, 3 or 4
yeah,
5 times a day. Just,
and
what's
I'm,
the deal with Cheerios? You know, just something I'm just...
And I'm personally, I personally think that the guy who's just... having coffee right now with so and so. I'm like,
yeah,
you know, you're so pretentious that you think the rest of us give a damn that that's what you're doing right now. And maybe some people do.
Right, right.
But to me, that just seems really weird. And I remember one time I started typing something on Facebook and I just thought, who cares? And I erased it. And I immediately said, you know what, from now on, this is only related to my job.
Yeah.
Because, man, it also turned into a time-consuming thing on Facebook.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because I'd have people just, you know, instant messaging me right and left, and then I'd have people, hey, go, you know, and the next thing I know, I've been sitting there for 2 hours commenting with some guy.
And it's mostly bands just trying to push their deal, which is fine.
That's what everybody's trying to do, but I think it's simply a tool available to you to, you know, I have a lot of friends on Facebook, and it's a good, easy, quick way to get a message out or to promote a show.
Right.
And I think it's a very valuable tool.
Yeah.
The Twitter thing, it could do the same thing, I guess, but I don't see the need for both of them.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Now, there's been talk of Facebook buying Twitter
and
incorporating
as well,
one into the other. That'd be awesome.
Yeah.
But, you know, I don't have time to sit and update all that stuff and stay on it. I do not have enough. I haven't been able to make a podcast in 3 months.
That's right. Where have you been, man?
Don't have time to do all of that. You know, there's too much other stuff that I feel is more important
stuff. And you're like, well, we write songs and play shows. And you look at Ashton Kutcher, like, what does he do? And the answer is nothing. He just goes to award shows. Oh, he makes a movie once a year, maybe, or... And so he can sit around on the set and just tweet and...
Sleeps with his 50-year-old wife?
I guess. I'm just like...
I don't know.
I don't know what he does. I mean...
I think it is a cool way to...
reach your existing fan base, right?
Like, there's that...
There's some
chick that Lefsetz has talked about several times.
Amanda Palmer. Yeah, he talks about her a lot.
You know, she's in town and she tweets and says, hey, I'm going to do an impromptu show at this park in San Francisco.
Yeah.
And 200 of her fans will show up. And that's really cool.
That is cool.
But, you know, I don't think Amanda Palmer built her fan base with Twitter.
I think she already had
a fan base, and now she connects with them. So it's a connection thing, not a growth thing.
I think so, too.
And, you know, if I ever get to the point where I feel like I can send out a message like that and get 50 people to come join me at the park for an impromptu show.
You better get ready.
Then I will do it. That's fine.
Yeah, right, right.
But until then, I'm not going to just inundate people with, hey, here's my new song, check it. I mean, I do that enough with people who've told me they want to hear that stuff from me.
Yeah, right, right.
But I really feel like I'm intruding at some point. And, you know, I hate even sending out mass emails to people on my email list because I'm like, man, I know how I feel when I get them. And I get dozens of emails a day from
these
people promoting something.
Yeah. How do you keep... You know, some bands, you know, like a Dave Matthews or somebody, they'll have a fan club, a paid for monthly fee. They charge a fan for some kind of access.
Yeah.
Because any jackass can just sign up for his Twitter feed or his Facebook. You know what I'm saying? I mean,
yeah.
So, you know, I always feel a little hollow in that when I send out a little, hey, the new album's here, I have some diehard fans reading that. And then I have maybe just some casual dude that just, it didn't cost me anything to get on there. and it's all I'm providing. Right. And that somehow cheats the guy who's really into it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
That he's just getting the same little, you know, update that somebody else is doing or something. I don't know what the solution to that is. I mean, you seem like you'd really have to have a large following to say, hey, if you want an all-access deal with, you know, songs we're working on, interviews and stuff,
yeah,
it's, you know, $9.99 a month, first come, first serve on tickets, you got to have that kind of a career going on. I mean,
right,
yeah,
right.
We're just playing in bars. I'm kind of like, I don't know, get there early and get right in. But so I don't know what kind of that access that would be. And then you run the risk, of course, of having just the creepy four guys show up by themselves and and dateless, you know.
Yeah,
who love Kurt.
Well, I think it's an indispensable tool if you're Dave Matthews or John Mayer. I think it's an incredible way for them to get a different level of access.
Yeah, totally.
But I have a hard time finding how it's going to help me at this point.
Grow your audience.
Because there's only been one or two ways I've seen that my audience grows, and it has very little to do with the internet. Well, yeah. No, I shouldn't say that. But it has something to do with the internet. But yeah. But I also have just a problem with some of that stuff on just a human level. I have friends who their iPhone or their BlackBerry is their only focus.
Yeah.
And all day long, they're on their Facebook or they're tweeting, whatever, or they're texting when they're in a group full of people. And people who I've, you know, good close friends with, and you can't carry on a conversation with them anymore.
Yeah, that's right.
Because on a certain level, all this technology, all these smartphones, all these social networks have completely taken out the human interaction element of social gatherings.
Yeah.
And if you want to piss me off while I'm trying to talk to you,
I don't.
Start texting me or start texting on your phone.
Yeah.
Or doing something else. I mean, it drives me up the wall.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, you see people just walking down the sidewalk on their phone, and I'm like, man, life is happening around you.
Right.
And you were just staring at that 4-inch screen. You know,
yeah.
there's got to be a level where you say, okay, you know, enough. It's a little crazy, and I get called old fashioned and technology hater for that. But no, I love technology, and I'm on my computer all the time. But
you got to be in the world, not just on it.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So I feel.
I feel better now.
I'm
gonna sit up on this couch for a minute. Well, I want to get Kurt South's view. It so happens when he takes a long break. I have other podcasts with other guests.
Mm-hmm.
Phenomenal guests. Pete Coatney, Kevin Haggard, Huckabee, Jason Stahl, you know, just to name some recent ones. But inevitably, a topic will come up where I'm sitting here thinking, I want to hear what South's take is on this. I'll bet he'd have a bombastic, scathing opinion on it. But I want to approach something that came up in the Huckabee podcast a couple weeks ago. Talk about just kind of the nature of playing shows these days and maybe what younger people are really doing with their time and how they're being brought up and maybe what their opinions are on live music. Zach, who made a record here, is a younger guy, 22, 23. And he had some interesting thoughts on it. I was gonna throw some of his observations your way, South.
Sure.
You can just fire at will. Coming up in our next podcast, in our next segment here on the podcast, we're going to rehash some ground on the current live game out there. Do young people look at live music like us old guys do? We'll see. Coming back in just a moment.
Remember that we're out here, my friend. My father says the issue's always freedom in the end. And say all prayers at night. And thank the Lord that you're alright. Yeah, living isn't an easy thing. Living isn't an easy thing. No, living isn't an easy thing to do. Yeah, living isn't an easy thing. Yeah, living isn't an easy thing.
Fans, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. Did you know that now legendary catchphrase is emblazoned on the brand new Pritchett shirt? It's got the Spartan helmet. Go to p2merch.com. It's only $15. I'll mail it out myself. Just in time for Christmas, the new Roman, Fans, Romans, countrymen t-shirt is there. as is the new album, Mark of the Human Hand, just $8, or you can download it on p2tunes.com for just $4. Hit the website. Fill up a cart, man, for the holidays.
Do you have Phil Pritchett Snuggies?
Snuggies? What is a Snuggie? Oh, is that like blanket thing with the
blanket
sleeves?
With the sleeves?
Dude, I wish I had one of those.
The Love Shack on 7th Street, the new one, they have a stack of them by the door. So if it's cold out on the patio, you just put a Snuggie on.
Ooh, a used Snuggie.
Yeah.
Wow.
They have like 50
game
of
worn.
Them.
Game worn.
So you can just go out there and get drunk while wearing a Snuggie if you want during cold
then
weather.
Then turn it in and leave it for the next guy.
I will buy.
I think that would violate some health codes or something. No?
Who knows?
You don't care, huh?
I don't care.
Of course, we're all in bars anyway. It's amazing that we all don't get.
I think our careers violate health codes.
I think it does too.
So.
Well, that leads us in to our next point here. You're familiar with Zach Huckabee mm-hmm. and some of these young guys coming in here. We played in Amarillo a couple nights ago up at the Golden Light, which has been there forever. Arcadio and the whole gang, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You played some shows with us mm-hmm. there. Man, there was certainly a heyday for that venue and a lot of other ones. Early 2000s or so. And I kind of got into this with Huckabee a little bit. Well, let me get back. The Golden Light, I run into Mike. Mike used to drive the bus and road manage for the great Coup de Grâce. Everyone's favorite old Amarillo band. Coup de Grâce, of course. What was the song they had in the truck commercial?
I was born.
On the Llano Estacado. Yeah. So they did the Live at Billy Bob's deal. they played the Golden Light like something like every Friday and Saturday night for 2 years. Then they just buy a bus and hit the road. And they're all lawyers now or something. Matt Martindale. Great folks. But sort of, I guess, burned out or something, several years ago. It didn't do it anymore. But Mike just pointed out, Mike's probably, I don't know, mid-40s maybe.
Mike, the guy, he's the sound guy, too.
Yeah, ran sound at the Amarillo
Blue
Lights.
He's a great sound guy. He's
great
one of my
sound
favorite,
guy. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Favorite sound guys.
Yeah, he ran sound at the Amarillo place.
Yeah.
The Blue Light Amarillo chapter. Short-lived. Mike, he drank coffee all day. It's like 2 in the morning. He just got like a 42-ounce hot coffee. I'm like, Mike, you still drinking coffee? He goes, oh, hell yeah. I can't go to sleep without this stuff. I'm like, go to sleep? I've just been drinking all day, smoking. Anyway, he just goes, man, because we were talking about everything. He goes, man, I feel like people in their early 20s, man, they just don't party, man, like we used to party. I'm kind of like, oh, well, okay, here's the older guy. Man, this is kind of good old day syndrome. What do you mean? They're not having a good time drinking and stuff? Of course they are. Mike just goes, man, but we used to be able to go to bars, get an X on our hand, wipe it off in the bathroom, get a $5 beer at Poor David's Pub. Indeed, I made a live album at the Tap and Poor David's Pub. What was that, 2003, 2004? Mm-hmm. Cool and Unusual. And, man, if you were to be really honest, how many of those people at those shows were over 21 years old, not drinking in excess, and not smoking? Because if you tried to make that record now, you're not going to have anybody in there under 21.
Mm-hmm.
Now, back in those days, it was like, oh, you can get in
if you're
under
18.
21. We'll mark your hand, Of course, you can smoke everywhere, drink whatever. But, man, since then, man, in the last few years, and I'm not saying this is a bad thing. I'm just pointing this out. Man, the drink and driving laws have gotten so severe. The penalties for TABC, even Poor David, at some point he just said, man, we cannot have anyone in this bar under 21 years old or whatever the law, because, man, I'm going to get fined $20,000 and go to jail. I mean, it got so steep on the drinking. If a cop pulls you over and you've had two or three beers, you're screwed, man. You cannot afford it. Bad, bad, bad. So I go back to when I was like 20 and roaming up and down 6th Street in college and just going in and out of bars, paying $1 for Pabst Blue Ribbon and watching Soul Hat. And just, I did that live album and Phil Comes Alive was like 97. I mean, that place was a short-lived place called the Side Street Bar. It was an upstairs bar. It was owned by an ex-UT swimmer who was probably himself 24 or something.
Yeah.
And, dude, it was, it was a wink-wink, ha-ha, underage place. You wouldn't have gone to this place if you were 25. I mean, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's had a pool table and a dartboard. The reason it was fun is like, hey, man, you can go in there and get you a cold beer and watch the band play. Well, I benefited from that. As a guy who was trying to get people to pay $5 to come in the door, whatever it was, everybody did, man. Ingram, Pat Green, whoever, all benefited from that.
Yeah.
But, man, I don't know what the exact loss, but man, when I go play some of these bars that I've been playing for a lot of years, and I hadn't played the Golden Light in a lot of years. It'd been a year since we've been there. And I just notice a lot of it's just me getting older. I mean, I'm not in my 20s anymore. So my fans are like in their mid-30s. You know, a lot of the guys who've been with me since day one or whatever, they got kids and stuff. So I'm kind of like, well, my crowd gets older. But see, in the early 90s, Jerry Jeff Walker, somebody, everyone said, man, he always plays fraternity parties. He always comes back and plays college bars. Because, why? Well, he wanted to get in front of that young audience, those 18, 17-year-olds were his biggest fans. Who else is going to vomit and tear a urinal off the wall and put on his Jerry Jeff Walker shirt and get in a fight and pay $10 for the privilege?
Yeah.
Some young guy, not some guy that's 40. I mean, so those guys' careers were just constantly reborn in that atmosphere. But I feel like as I get into my 30s and been doing it for 15 years pretty hard, I'm like, hey, man, we need to keep going back to Lubbock, keep going back to wherever, Nacogdoches, College Station. It's tough. You can't be any younger than like a junior in college to even come into some of these places.
Right.
You can't smoke in there anymore. And if you have one or two beers, you better have someone else driving you or pay for a cab. And man, I'm just going to tell you, it's damn tough. And Zach Huckabee sat there on that couch and just shook his head and goes, oh man, he goes, it has changed even from a few years ago, man, when I used to go see Pat Green or whatever. Mm-hmm. It is. The law is so tough and it is dangerous, you know, and you're just not going to – he said, man, young kids just put a keg on the porch and play video games and, you know, take a few bong hits and sit around the house. I'm kind of like
– steal their mom's Vicodin.
Well, I'm just kind of like, man, who's to say I wouldn't do the same if the atmosphere was that – it is tough going to see live music. And someone like an Eli Young or somebody – or Ingram, who's out there, who maybe gets in a young audience. Not really Ingram, but Eli Young. So, well, they got young fans. I mean, they're playing at, like, the theater at Grapevine Mills Mall, where moms can take their 15-year-old daughters in. It's not based around beer and smoking and, throwing up in the urinal.
You're right.
Am I right?
Do
young people go out seeking this sort of adventure that we so sought when we were in our early 20s, or has it kind of changed?
Well, they still do it, but like Huckabee said, they're drinking at home and playing video games.
That's what I would do. I mean, I'd just go, man, I just don't want to drive across town. Right? I'm not going to drive all the way to Deep Ellum and pay $10 to park, $10 to get in. I only have one beer. It's expensive.
Yeah.
My friend who's 20 can't get in. You know, we don't want to risk that whole thing. It's hard to even go do it, isn't it?
It is. It's a pain. It really is. I mean, even me being legal age to drink, going to a show is I really admire the people who come out to shows.
Oh, me too.
I'm shocked at how many people pay to get in, pay to park. We played the White Elephant last week with the band. You have to pay to park.
Yeah.
Oh, there's pay no, to get in. You know,
walk a long way.
And the White Elephant has cheap drinks, but it's still expensive. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you're walking a long way. It's kind of a bad neighborhood. And I'm like, I am amazed this many people
soldier through all that.
Because I wouldn't do it.
Right, that's right.
Now, maybe I would when I was 26.
Yeah, maybe so.
Yeah, I guess
maybe
I would.
So.
But, man, now there's no way. I mean, I look at the Fort Worth Weekly or the newspaper all the time and see online somebody's playing at the Granada Theater I really want to see or...
Right.
You know, even playing just down the road, I'm like, man, I'm not going to do it.
It's just...
I'm not going to do it. It's gotten to be way too much, and, you know...
But does that mean we're getting old? That just means we're getting old, doesn't it? We got kids now, we can't get out.
But I remember back when I was in college, going to see live music was the thing to do.
Well, that's kind of more my point I'm getting around to. That's just what you did to be... having a fun early 20s life, man. You went to bars, you saw bands, and you got on their mailing lists and stuff. And now you can just stay home on your computer, man, and just sip a beer and play video games
and
online poker.
And so many kids now that I've noticed in my times around college students
your
now.
Your advanced years.
Man, they're going a lot of just the dance club thing.
Yeah.
And it's just...
Yeah.
You know, Club Milk or some bullshit name like that everybody's going to. And
yeah, yeah.
You know, is that me getting old? But I know those places were so few and far between when I was in college.
Yeah, I feel
you,
like that.
Those places weren't even an option. And it's all the you know, the MTV culture, I think, has affected a lot of that. It just these 21-year-old girls sit at home and watch Laguna Beach and all that crap and start acting like they were born and raised on the West Coast, and they go to these, you know, VIP red velvet carpet clubs with where you have to
That's
pay.
Those aren't your fans out there? They're not Kurt Sal fans?
No.
Who is your typical Kurt Sal fan?
The demographic at my show is, I would say the average age is late 20s, mm-hmm. 26, 27. You know, so most of them are out of college.
Yeah. Probably don't have kids yet if they come to a lot of shows.
Yeah, yeah. You know, some of them have kids, but a lot of them don't. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I would say it's a 25 to 40 year old crowd. It is not a young crowd.
Yeah, me neither. Well, they can't get in. Younger than that.
No, they can't.
I'm 25, or are you just like, well,
they can't get
in.
And, you know, we have a young, real young audience, like out in Mississippi. That's a young, but I didn't play bars when I first went out there.
Right.
I was playing private stuff or semi-private stuff, or, you know, just we'd play out at this place out on the lake, you know, and anybody could come. But I noticed when we did switch to playing a club there, the audience is cut by 75%.
Yeah.
And I mean, you know, the 300 will show up when you play out at the lake. You know, 100 will show up when you play at the club.
Well, here's an interesting dilemma, because I do have, I played a private deal in Fort Worth the other night. About this time last year. It was a fundraiser for something. They said, man, we'd love you, man. Come on out, come on out. So I was like, all right, it's just an acoustic deal. I show up, man, it's some huge fundraiser deal. We're a bunch of well-off people just, you know, getting a room together and sweating each other and just get drunk and... But, man, I start playing my songs, and, man, they start singing every word. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're just – they know everything. Play Antarctica, play Snuff Machine, all that older, like, stuff. They know it all. I'm shocked. I'm like, God, I thought I was just going to be anonymously kind of playing in here. Maybe someone, oh, yeah, Phil, what's going on? No. I was a guest of honor at this thing. Mm-hmm. They knew it all cold. Now, they didn't know my newer stuff probably as well. Not nearly as well. So I start running through the old stuff. They love it. They love it. Man, I'm just kind of – but I'm thinking – you know, where have these people been, man? Well, of course, they're in their third. They're all married. They got kids. They don't go. They're not going to go through what you just described to go to one of my shows. They're not maybe as internet savvy as your average 21-year-old. Mm-hmm. So they're not going to download stuff off my site.
Right.
So it puts me and you perhaps in a odd demographic to where we do have a lot of fans that are probably in their 30s or 40s. And I just don't know how to reach them. All they remember is they were drunk, like me. Hey, 1997, I went to UT, went to Phil's live recording. We went to 50 shows that year. We got in that fight that time in College Station. We went to Corpus Spring Break and saw him. Man, then they graduate and move on. And there's no, unlike maybe the Jerry Jeff Walker era, you're not constantly able to replenish those fans.
Right.
You know, I was kind of like, man, you just got kind of these guys that knew me when. But when I go back to these colleges, you still got to be over 21 to even get in here. I mean, you've kind of missed them almost by the time that they're out of college. You know what I'm saying? I mean, we get somebody at the Granada who's 25 and have never seen us. Yeah, they're going to think, hey, cool, that's a great show, Phil. But there's nowhere for me to go and get in front of 18-year-olds, 300 of them, and just say, hey, here's what we do.
Nope.
You know,
it's virtually impossible.
There's nowhere to go.
Levels.
We used to go to these places when I first started going, Phil Comes Alive era. We'd go to Nacogdoches, man. Nobody went out there and played that place, really, except on some local bands. And, man, my CDs had started getting, like, Hastings and stuff. And, dude, we'd play for 500 people, man. But I guarantee if you said, hey, man, no smoking, no excessive drinking, you got to be over 21, we wouldn't have 15 people there. I'm just kind of like, that's why everybody's here. I mean, they like my music, but I'm like, there's just no – I just wonder if that scene – I kind of likened it with Huckabee to maybe the late 60s where you had acid coming in and psychedelic drugs and all these bands. All this music, man, is so great. The Grateful Dead. Yeah, whatever. They were good. But it was all based around that fun scene, man, being out there in the tents, dropping acid and meeting girls. That was the scene, man. That's why there were a million people in that field. Come on. And, man, and let me tell you what, as soon as the law caught on and the dangers of all that stuff started to get out and guys started going away for 20 years for selling drugs and, you know, all that kind of stuff started to come to the fore, dude, that whole deal went away. Yeah. And so I wonder, places like the Golden Light used to not be able to get in there, man, because it was, you know, wink, wink, nah, ha, ha, you know, lick the X off your hand and grab a beer. And I'm not accusing the Golden Light of doing that intentionally. I'm not saying that, but you know what I'm saying.
Just, oh, yeah.
It hasn't gone away. I'm just like, man, this whole playing in a bar thing and everybody getting drunk, that might just, I don't know. It might just be going away.
Hey,
to some degree.
I'll tell you this.
Look at Jack Ingram's. Sorry, I'm interrupting. Yeah. I'll let you go. Ingram, just for an example of some guy who came up in that era, you look at his national schedule now. I mean, like, man, Jack's doing and stuff. Man, he just plays casinos. He plays private events, corporate events. He plays fairs and festivals. Mm-hmm. He's not going to some bar in Louisville, Kentucky, you know, and just putting $15 at the door. Yeah. And just packing the son of a bitch out the door.
No.
That's increasingly rare. Now, there are some guys who can do that because they have enough of that. Fans over 25, like Ragweed or someone, it might have a lot of fans that are in their late 20s or early 30s. So yeah. They can maybe do it. Or Jack probably can in some markets. But, man, the panache of going to something like that only appeals to kind of an underage guy, right. I would say, or girl. Then someone who's, you know, you and I aren't going to go.
Well, the best things that I've done recently have been playing places like Fred's, that it's a daytime gig. Anybody can get in. Mm-hmm. And, man, I've gained more fans, reconnected with more old fans.
Totally.
But man, just the showing up at a bar and, hey, we're going to play in front of our people, man.
They can't get in.
But I do. That's why, man, I do so much private stuff, or I put on my own shows at non-bars and stuff, or on some dude's property somewhere, because I know that everybody can come, and it's just a totally different deal.
Totally different. We joked that time I played at Central Market. You played that gig too.
Yeah.
We were kind of like, oh, we're playing at a grocery store. Is this where our career is? I'm just kind of like, man, they called. You know, they paid and people came. We ended up getting rained out after like three songs. It was kind of a funny mess. But
you know what?
Had a lot of people. I was like, man, you know, that's one show I could go around town going, hey, man, we're playing at the grocery store. But they have a nice stage out there, nice PA, yeah. And they do a concert series out there. And subsequently, we've booked for this next year a thing in Roanoke and Pflugerville. All these municipalities who have like some, you know, Thursday night concert series from 7 to 9 or something. I'm just kind of like, it's markedly different, man, than how we came up. And you're kind of like, well, man, what bar are we going to play? And it just seems like, you know, Blaine of Blaine's Pub or David Card or all these legendary just bar owners who, you know, would have your car towed in front of their bar if you weren't in there drinking and were hard on the bands, but, man, kept things. Those guys are just few and far between, because those guys were all about the music, David Carr or somebody. And you just don't even know who those guys are now. I was kind of like, man, you know.
But I tell you what, you know, we played that Central Market thing. It was 103 degrees in August, and there was probably 300 people out there.
Yeah, it's a big deal.
And
the thing at 8-0's, you know, another deal that's free and outside, and it's a restaurant thing. So I think you can get in there if you're under.
Yeah, I looked out in the crowd and saw people I hadn't seen in 6-7 years.
Yeah, me too.
Who brought their kids. Oh, this is awesome. We should do stuff like this more often. I think the bar thing's just, it's funneled down to a very small thing.
Yeah.
And I think you're kidding yourself if you think, oh, I'm reaching everybody there's to reach just by playing bar.
No question
listen,
about
you want to hear crickets? Put on a Kurt South show on College Station.
Yeah.
Charge 10, but nobody's going to show up.
Yeah. They're not old enough to get in, and it's too expensive.
Nobody's going to show up.
Yeah. It's just it's too hard.
But so I've found a lot of alternatives.
Yeah.
And I really don't think you can build your audience on the road anymore playing bars.
Man, I think you're
I think
right.
That's a myth. I think that's why I don't do it. I don't tour very much.
So if we
much.
Can't build our audience online with Twitter and all this stuff, and we can't build our audience touring, how do we build our audience, South?
The last 2 years have grown for me exponentially.
Yeah.
Because I have gone off the grid.
Yeah.
And
you play locally a lot.
I play locally a lot because my theory is
that's kind of how Bob Schneider in Austin.
Yeah.
Look how good he does. Man, he just plays in Austin all the time. Tours a lot, but people know him by reputation of that. Hey, man, he plays in Austin all the time.
Yeah. Well, I play locally because my theory is we all want to play shows where a lot of people show up and sell more albums, right? And consequently make more money. So I started thinking one day, driving back from an hellish gig in San Angelo or something.
Yeah.
Just in the town I live in, Fort Worth alone, there's over 500,000 people who don't know me.
Yeah, that's right.
So
yeah.
Why am I driving to a town with 50,000 people?
Right.
3 hours away for yeah. $500.
That's right.
Let me win over all these people. And I set out to do just that.
Yeah, yeah.
And I have done just yeah. that. I have grown my deal exponentially the last couple of years.
Yeah.
And the money has been way better than it ever would have been if I'd gone and done yeah. what the business traditionally tells you. Get a band together, get in your van, go out, drive around, play this place, play that. Man, my advice to guys is, hey, wherever it is that you are, there's a population that if you're good, you can win them over.
That's right. That's right.
And then, man, that stuff on the road will come to you. You know, stuff comes to me in states hours away from here.
Sure, yeah.
And I don't have to make any of it happen. I pride myself as working extremely hard on building something right where I live because mm-hmm. there's a population base to support it. And, man, I can go months without leaving town.
Yeah, that's right.
And make, you know, do great.
And plus, there's so many bands. I mean, for a while, there was only one Jack Ingram or Keane or even myself out playing a little bit. A guy that really travels and does this for a living. That was sort of a novel thing.
Right.
There's so many bands now, dude. I mean, we go to Lubbock, and this kid William Clark Green's out there with his band, or Josh Abbott and a couple mm-hmm. Lubbock guys. Those guys were huge in Lubbock, much bigger than us. They lived there, uh-huh. for God's sakes. I mean, every, you know, 15,000 kids at Tech knew all their songs. I'm like, it's so much more possible now to be just a huge local band. You know what I mean? Whereas in the old, back when I got going, if you were just a local guy, that meant you weren't very much. You know what I mean?
Right,
I was kind of
right.
Like, yeah, just local. And that's still true to a large extent. But,
yeah.
But man, it's competitive to go out there. You kind of, it's not as...
Well, and it's just not worth it financially.
It's not worth it. Yeah, you're just kind of like,
it is not worth it. And anyone who tells you that you're going to load up your van and this is
go rake it in on the road.
Yeah, well, you're out of your mind if you think that.
Yeah.
But I remember feeling really silly when I would play in Fort Worth and people would come to me and go, "Wow, we've never heard of you before. Where have you been?" "Well, I just pulled in from Lubbock." And they're like, "Ah, that's kind of funny. You tour, but no one in your hometown knows who you are." I thought, that's what I'm doing wrong.
That's right.
I'm going to make it happen here if it's going to happen anywhere.
Right.
And all that other stuff, it may or may not happen.
Yeah, yeah.
And I got little pockets where it does happen.
Sure.
But I only have to hit them a couple times a year, and the quality of life is a million times higher. I'll tell you that.
Yeah.
But I have...
Keeping it close to home, because you can play a lot home and then have your stuff online where anywhere in the world can hear you and
yeah.
enjoy you and read about you and watch videos and just think, "Oh, Curtie's so great. He's from Fort Worth. We ought to fly him up here to New Hampshire for a gig." Maybe that's
that
the future. It does happen.
That
does
stuff
happen.
Happens fairly often.
Yeah.
That stuff happens.
You do get those.
And
yeah.
But, you know, I think if you just think for yourself and you look at what your situation is. Okay,
we're going to walk into some bar in California and just blow everyone away. First of all, there's going to be nobody there.
Yeah, no one's going to care.
Yeah, it's just...
But I think by just sometimes not paying attention to what everyone else is doing and really looking at your situation and going, "Hey, man, I know I can't do all that and
right.
get by. But I can do this." Mm-hmm. Just be smart about it and
yeah.
Work hard at it. And if it's good, good things will happen. And
absolutely.
So live the dream,
live
kids.
Live the dream,
live
kids.
The dream.
Well, man, that leads us in seamlessly in our next segment here. Kurt South has already been on record as saying The Doors, the band, is the biggest waste of studio time in the history of the world. Now, look, hey, I'm not their biggest fan, okay? But, man, I am a fan. So... usually we come into the vault section of our podcasts, both of us extolling the virtues of some album, you know, the Stones, Van Morrison. Oh, high praise. Not today, folks. A Phil Pritchett podcast. First, we're going to debate The Doors. Genius rock and roll or just an ass whipping when we come back?
Hey everyone, this is Kurt South, and you're listening to the man himself, Phil Pritchett, on the P2 Podcast.
God said it's time to close now. I guess I better go now. I really like to stay here all night. The cars crawl past, all stuffed with eyes. The street lights share their hollow glow. Your brain seems bruised with numb surprise.
Clock says it's time to go now.
Fans, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. Phil Pritchett here on the P2 Podcast. Thank you for listening, everyone, worldwide there. PhilPritchett.com and on RadioFreeTexas.org. The great Kurt South is here with
us.
Hey. How you doing, South?
I'm great. I'm ready to debate.
Well, we always sit here and extol the virtues of some genius songwriter, some great universally accepted album. Most of the time here in the in the vault, hopefully shedding a little light on it, a little new perspective, maybe introducing it to some folks who maybe haven't checked it out too much before. I got into the Doors a little bit. See, I'm a few years older than you, and I think you may have really sort of missed... I was at prime age during the Great Doors revival of the late 80s.
No, I was right in the thick of it.
Were you really? The Val Kilmer movie, the Oliver Stone. I had the greatest hits and stuff, but I watched the movie a couple times. I read the book, man. Break on through, man. Yeah, you know. And then I went on a trip to Europe with my high school class and just had a hell of a time over there. And we found that old graveyard in Paris where Jim Morrison was buried. And we kind of trekked in there, and all these dudes were hanging out on Morrison's grave. There's graffiti everywhere and, you know, beer and cigarettes and all these dudes hanging out. And, you know, I kind of was like, man, Jim Morrison, wow, cool, you know. So I kind of went through a Doors thing. I also was known at a bar in the Inwood Tavern in Dallas, little-known bar there over on Inwood Road just south of Lover's Lane. I don't know if it's still there anymore, but they had this guy, Phil Looney. He was a... middle-aged piano player guy. He had a keyboard on an X stand and a drum machine, and it was pretty cool because it was karaoke, but it wasn't to tracks. He'd be playing, and you would grab the mic and sing a song with him, like it was a live performance. You get what I'm saying?
Sorry, I just threw up my mouth a little bit. Here I'm back. Sorry, what happened? I blacked out.
So he had this songbook with all these songs in it, you know. He had Margaritaville, all the usual stuff, you know. And so he would just gong 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 gong, and he would just play covers. But then you could give him a tip and jump up and grab the mic and just, you know, live it on sponge cake. Again, kind of back to our last segment, kind of a place you could just wipe the X off your hand and enjoy yourself. Not condoning it, just saying it as a fact. But so we went to the Inwood Tavern, Phil Looney. Well, in the back, a little-known song. He's just got Break On Through by the Doors. So this is at the height of this era. And I remember I'd broken my hand, you know, my crooked finger. I had pins in my hands. The first time I had a cast on, I was home from college for Christmas break or something. Went in there. I decided, man, I'm going to get up there and do a little Morrison. Of course, yeah, all these just buffoons in there having a good time. So, but man, I get up there. And, man, you know, this is maybe the start of my music career. I just killed it, you know.
Or
just,
the end of your music
maybe the
career.
Maybe the end, I don't know. But, you know, I just grabbed the mic and just kind of, you know, just lurched around the stage. You know, so we are the day, destroy the night. I just night defies the day. Just, so I really got into it and just hammed it up, and everybody thought it was great. And then a little bit later on, Phil Looney, every time I'd go in the bar, he'd kind of wave me up to do the Doors thing. So he did that a couple times. And even on his latest edition, way back then, on his songbook, it would just say, under Break On Through, just say, this is Phil Pritchett's signature song. I was very honored. Very honored to have that in there. So I had a long history with the Doors, with Jim Morrison. For God's sake, South. I grew up a cautious, conservative kid. You know what I mean? I'm a cautious, conservative adult, by large. I think there was something alluring to me, to someone like the Doors. Some guy that just was never sober his whole life. You know, was just all floating around on mountains. Jim Morrison, the Doors, the weird sounds. You don't buy it. Why not?
I thought it was horseshit back then, and I still do. Over 20 years later.
Ray Manzarek, the great keyboardist. You had John Densmore on the drums. Robbie Krieger on guitar. We're talking about their very first record.
It had all the... Where is it? Let me see here.
Opens up and just... Break on through to the other side. Now, come on, if you're a Doors fan, this is the only album you need, really. You got Soul Kitchen's my favorite. Let me sleep all night. The Crystal Ship. How can you not like The Crystal Ship?
Easily.
Before you slip into a consciousness.
Hold on, y'all hear that? You hear that sound? That's my life force just draining.
Come on, dude. She's a 20th century fox. Come on, dude. It's rock and roll.
No.
There's nothing more dangerous.
It's rock and roll. It's bad rock and roll.
Bad rock and roll. Of course, the big one, Light My Fires on there. Show me the way to the next whiskey bar, Alabama song. Oh, and you got, this is the end.
I was in a band in high school. I was in a band in high school called The End.
Really?
Named after that song.
Is that right? Maybe that's what put you in a bad mood about the whole thing. No? I never bought it. Why not? No bass? No bass guitar player?
No, he's just always a drunken buffoon.
Yeah. Do we get enough of that in the Texas music industry?
Heaven spades.
I got a bunch of Jim Morrison's, and all the Native American,
all of his poetry BS and just...
Well, that's true. I never...
Him himself just represented everything that I wanted to punch in the face. I just couldn't stand him. He was just so self-important and up there just floating around like some sort of little fairy. I just couldn't stand him.
Yeah, yeah.
He's one of those guys, I couldn't get past him enough to like the music.
Yeah, right.
He just always drove me. Every picture, just looking at his picture on that album cover makes me mad.
Yeah, right.
Because I never saw any perceivable talent that he had.
Yeah.
I mean, he didn't play any instrument. I didn't think he sang that good. He'd get up there and yell and just pull his wanger out of his pants. That's rock and roll.
Of course it is. Of course it is.
I didn't think it was funny. I don't know.
You never bought it.
I hear the Doors now and I start crying.
You do know it's the Doors though, when that keyboard comes in and the organ, the guitar, the Morrison singing. They had their own sound. You had to give them that.
Yeah, but you can say that about a guy. I'm thinking of a particular guy right now who sucks horribly, but people always know it's him because he sucks so bad. Because no one else sucks as hard as he does.
Oh, man. I guess I just wish, in an alternate life, I could just put on snakeskin pants and just stay drunk all day long.
I've done that before, and it is overrated.
Maybe that's the difference right there.
You think Jordan McCoskey and I didn't do that?
See, I look at the life of Jim Morrison, his short, chaotic life, where he never had to take any responsibility for anything. All he had to do was just take drugs and party his ass off till he was dead. God rest his soul. And, you know, that wasn't part of my deal. So I was just like, gosh, how did he live like that? I mean, what's the impetus for just living your life like that? That's out of my realm of understanding. So maybe you look at that and just say, big deal.
Oh, I've done that.
Yeah. You just didn't get paid as much as he did, I guess.
No. Yeah. But to me, that was just his whole thing is, I am so extreme.
Yeah, you should
respect me. I'm like, God, you don't do anything. You get up there and you just...
It does get a little nauseating, especially Manzarek, the blonde keyboard guy. I've seen him on so many interviews, and he does talk about Jim Morrison like he's some kind of a poet from another age reincarnated.
No.
I mean, like, you know, he does. He just goes on and on. Just Morrison, man, was locked in, man. He was he was connected to all the great sources of art, you know, and he brought it to us, and we were just lucky to be around him. He does have a lot of that crap that makes me go,
yeah, because he still gets paid off the legacy of
that
church.
You know, man, I liked it. I just dug, before I knew anything about all that stuff, man, just that sound of that keyboard and stuff, it was different than anything else.
It sounded like a bad circus was going on.
Yeah,
just that
I know.
Keyboard
yeah.
going on
people,
back there.
You know, they're definitely a band people love or just hate, man. You can't,
so
you,
what side of the fence do I fall on?
You're firmly on the hate the Doors side.
Man.
I don't know, man. I feel strangely connected to Jim Morrison, man, in some weird way I can't explain. I don't know if it's because I went to his grave. I don't know. You're so much, this kid on
and that's
on
so shocking out of
know,
you because
know,
that
man.
Is just so polar opposite of you.
It is, man. But dude, I love some of those little riffs, man. Those little tasty just
well, then you ought to love John Lee Hooker because he made that riff.
I know, man. Just Roadhouse Blues and Love Me Too, John Bailey. And dude, he could you know, his voice, his pitch was never very good, but man, when he just did the I just like that stuff, man. He's just got a good guttural, you know, scream. He just sang from a mountaintop, man. He just sang from a dream state. He was never fully where he was.
He sounded like he was getting an enema most of the time.
Yeah. Well, they're still out there, man. Check out the Doors album if you don't like that. Give up. There's nothing else out there for you. Peace Frog, man.
Peace Frog. That is a good riff.
That's a pretty cool little riff. Blood and streets is up to my ankles. Well, the Doors, man, they're out there. Check them out for your pleasure or at your peril, Kurt South would say. Man, a debate here in the vault on the
Hot
Doors.
Debate.
Hot debate. We'll have to find some more artists that divide us to just come in here and just go ahead and knock this on. This is enjoyable. Well, Kurt South has been here. Thanks so much for being here.
Oh,
man.
Thanks for having me again.
Good luck with all your success, all your new album, playing all your shows at Fred's, the Hipster Hangover Party every Sunday at noon. Kurt South is there, White Elephant all the time. He's Fort Worth's own, you know, Bob Schneider is to Austin. He's Kurt South is to Fort Worth.
But I'm more accessible than
more
Bob.
More accessible. Not nearly
than
as
Bob.
Distant and difficult, you know.
Yeah.
So, Kurt, thanks for being here. Email me, phil@philpritchard.com, or call me, 817-733-5256. Let us know where we can come play for you. Well, for Phil Pritchard and Kurt South, we're going to sign off on this edition of the podcast. We will see you again next Wednesday. Same time, same place. Be good to each other. We'll see you then.
Well, she's fashionably lean, and she's fashionably lame. She'll never rank a scene, she'll never break a day. But she's no drag, just watch the way she walks. She's a 20th century fox. She's a 20th century fox. No tales, no bills, no ruin years, no plots. She's a 20th century fox. Oh, yeah. She's the lady who waits. Since her mind left school, it never hesitates. She won't waste time on